Tonight we continue in our series, If I Were a Christian Kid, speaking to the issue of truth-telling and honesty. We last studied the subject of the control of our tongues. Now we're looking at the content of our speech. I often told my children as they were growing up, and still remind them, that the most valuable possession they have is my trust. If I trust them, I will endeavor to do all I can for them, to give them all I can, and to allow them liberties within bounds of wisdom. But if I don't trust them, they'll find themselves living encased within the little boundary, a little border, with limited privileges and opportunities. And the crucial issue that is at the center of having your parents trust you, children, is you proving to them that you're telling them the truth, that you are being honest. One thing that certainly led to spankings in my house was the discovery of lies. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who tells lies will not escape. Proverbs 19:5. There was no negotiation on the discovery of lies. There was no release of punishment. In my domestic government, a liar received an immediate and certain punishment. This, I think, is in keeping Psalm 101, the first of many texts this evening, in the way in which David likewise administered his rule in his house. In Psalm 101, David describes the administration of his rule. And in particular, in verse 7, he says, "He who practices deceit shall not dwell within my house. He who speaks falsehood shall not maintain his position for me." In other words, David says, in my kingdom, if I discover that you're telling me a lie, you've lost your job. You're not going to maintain your position with me. There is immediate repercussion. I think in our domestic government, parents, that there's a principle here that is applicable. And as we continue our study, I believe we'll see that there's good reason for this stringency on this issue of lying. Lies very quickly become part of our experience as human beings. You remember lying to your parents? You remember sustaining that fib over a course of several days and deceiving them about that thing that you did that they didn't know? And you continue to sustain that lie about where you'd been. Remember being a liar and thinking, I'm getting away with this. Really? Remember discovering that you've been lied to? Recall that experience when you realize that someone that you've trusted and you believed and you've put your confidence in has proven themselves to be lying to you the whole time. Life becomes an uncertain place when you discover that people readily lie to you, that you live in the land of fraud and deception and evasion and lies. It makes you feel vulnerable. Cripples your confidence in others. It's a destruction of relationships. It leads to the death of intimacy. So if you're a Christian kid here tonight, I challenge you and call you to resolve before Christ that you are going to be a truth teller and that you are going to cultivate the knowledge of the truth in your heart and that you are going to speak the truth from your mouth, and that you are going to conduct yourself truthfully in your behavior. And like God, you're going to learn to hate lies and to love and do the truth. Well, you have an outline. Tonight, I hope to get through the first half of that outline. So we can begin by considering the origin of lies. In John chapter 8, Jesus makes it clear that Satan is the originator of lies. In John 8, verse 44, Jesus speaking to the Pharisees who are claiming some sense of entitlement because of an ethnic relation to Abraham as their father, Jesus repudiates that claim, identifying them not as the sons of Abraham, but in fact as the sons of Satan, because of their aversion to him and their rejection of his word. Notice verse 43, you cannot hear my word. Then he says, verse 44, you are of your father, the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie or the lie, he speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Now, Jesus is referring here in regard to the lie back to Genesis chapter 3, where Satan took the words of God, you shall surely die, and added the word not. You shall surely die, not. And that constitutes the lie that men apart from Christ believe and live by. And it's the lie that you can sin and not be punished. People believe that. That they can violate the law of God and go unpunished. And that's a lie. And that lie began with Satan. And Satan's design in that lie was to murder the image of God and thus slander God by marring his image and bring his name and reputation to disrepair. So Satan is the slanderer. He's the accuser. He's the liar. He's the deceiver. And children, you need to understand that this inclination that seems to come so easy to you is demonic. It is associated in the scriptures with Satan. We get accustomed to lies. We expect people to lie to us. I mean, there are places in the world where you go to do business with someone and the price they give you, immediately you say, that's not the price. We're going to negotiate because he's not telling me the truth right off the bat. That's not the price we're going to end up with. We're going to come out to another price. We expect lies. We encourage sometimes lying. We reward people to lie to us. We spend money and devote hours to watch special effects. We think, well, it's no big deal. Well, it is a big deal. You see, children, liars are sons of Satan. And that should put a sense of fear and abhorrence in your heart toward what lying is. It has the quality of hell. But it's also part of our human depravity, secondly. In Matthew chapter 15, we read verse 19, where Jesus describes the fallen, depraved human heart and says, for out of the heart come evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, slanders. These are the things which defile the man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile the man. Notice false witness and slanders. Those are two variations of lying. Breaking the ninth commandment, bearing false witness, and then misrepresenting the reputation or the name or the behavior of someone else is a form of lying. And that comes out of our hearts. It's part of our fallen human nature. David says in Psalm 58:3, the wicked are estranged from the womb. These who speak lies go astray from birth. Children, have you ever been called into your parents' living room and they sat you down and seriously looked you eye to eye and say, son, I need to teach you how to tell a good lie?
That ever happened to you? No one has had to teach you how to lie? Why? Because it comes naturally. It comes out of your fallen nature. It comes out of your depraved heart. It comes out of the spiritual deadness to which we're born, estranged, separated from God, right from the womb. A natural depravity. This is the origin of lies in Satan and in our fallen state. Which brings us, secondly, to consider the danger of dishonesty. Now, instead of doing as you've seen me do before, bringing a whole litany of proverbs and various texts that speak about the danger of lying, I decided instead to give you two examples that you might see by way of illustration, one from the Old and the other from the New Testament. So let's turn to 2 Kings chapter 5, into the life and ministry of Elisha and his servant Gehazi, little liar. The incident, you recall, is when Naaman, the Syrian general, comes to Elisha thinking, as many people do, because of his great profile, because of his great wealth, because of what a wonderful man he is, certainly he deserves to be saved. So he brings 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold. He brings hundreds of thousands of dollars in order to purchase his healing, his salvation from the prophet of God. And along with that, 10 changes of clothes. He brings a stunning wardrobe with him there in verse 5 of 2 Kings 5. You recall the story of how he is compelled to do what Elisha says and to dip himself in the Jordan River. And once healed of his leprosy, he offers a present to Elisha. We read in verse 15. When he returned to the man of God with all his company, he came and stood before him and said, "Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. So please, take a present from your servant now." But he said, "Elisha, as the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will take nothing." And he urged him to take it, but he refused. So evidently, Gehazi's watching all of this, right? And his eyes are going ka-ching. I mean, look at all this gold, all this silver. Look at this wonderful wardrobe that is being offered. So rather than giving to Elisha this reward, Elisha gives Naaman a gift. And Naaman takes a donkey's load of dirt back with him. You may think that's strange. Well, you see, Yahweh, the Lord, was associated with the land. And so to take that land back with him was, in a sense, to take back a token of the presence of God with him. As Gehazi sees all this transpire and he watches this caravan of dirt go over the horizon, along with all that money and all of those, you know, cutting-edge fashion clothes, he gets greedy. And he designs a deception, to lie, in order that he might get some of Naaman's riches. Verse 20, "But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, thought, 'Behold, my master has spared this Naaman, the Aramean,'" that probably is not said in a complimentary tone of voice, "'by not receiving from his hands what he brought. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him.' So Gehazi pursued Naaman. When Naaman saw one running after him, he came down from the chariot to meet him and said, 'Is all well?' He said, 'All is well. My master has sent me, saying, Behold, just now two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of clothes.' Naaman said, 'Be pleased to take two talents.' And he urged him, and bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of clothes, and he gave them two of his servants, and they carried them before him.
And when he came to the hill, he took them from their hand and deposited them in the house. And he sent the men away, and they departed. But when he went in and stood before his master, and Elisha said to him, "Where have you been, Gehazi?" And he said, "Your servant went nowhere." What do you think, kids? Look at verse 22. "My master has sent me," lie number one. "Two men have come from the hill country of Ephraim who are sons of the prophets," lie number two. "Did they, these imaginary men, need clothes?" Lie number three. Verse 25, "Where have you been, Gehazi?" "Nowhere." Lie number four. Gehazi, in his mind, wanted to get dressed up like Naaman. He wanted to put Naaman's clothes on him. He was clothed like Naaman, but not with his clothes, with his leprosy. And he became, from that point on, ceremonially unclean. Inadmissible into the worship of God. The danger of dishonesty is seen in his leprosy and his uncleanness. We come to another example in Acts chapter 5. The characters of Ananias and Sapphira. Christians in Jerusalem are in the midst of the fresh flush of their love for Christ. And as we saw in Sunday school this morning, you love Jesus Christ, you're going to love the brethren. And filled with the Spirit and love, they were selling their property and they were providing for the needs of those in their midst in chapter 4 and verse 32. And Luke puts Barnabas in front of us on this occasion and introduces us to the man who's going to become a partner with the Apostle Paul in later accounts of the book of Acts. And Barnabas was an example of this generosity in verse 36 and 37 of chapter 4. But this climate of generosity put some pressure on this couple, Ananias and Sapphira. We read of them in verse 1 and 2 of chapter 5. "But a man named Ananias, with his wife Sapphira, sold a piece of property and kept back some of the price for himself with his wife's full knowledge. And bringing a portion of it, he laid it at the apostles' feet." So they sold some of their property, which was commonly being done, and they did that for a certain price. But they kept some of the money back for themselves and brought the rest of that and laid it at the apostles' feet. Now, in verse 4, we learn that Peter tells them, "Look, you didn't have to sell this. When it was unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not under your control?" The matter was not that they were obligated to sell their land. They could have done with their land whatever they desired to do. The problem, as Peter explains it here in verse 3, "Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back some of the price of the land while it remained unsold? Did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not under your control? Why is it that you have conceived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God." And as he heard these words, Ananias fell down and breathed his last, and a great fear came over all who heard of it. The young men got up and covered him up and carried him out, and they buried him. You see, it wasn't that they were, the problem was not that they had sold the land, and the problem was not that they had given the price. The problem was that they'd lied about it. You see, they pretended that they had sold the land for a lower price so that they could keep some of the money for themselves and still look like they had given everything to the church. They could have done that. It was in their power to do that. The problem was not that they didn't give enough. The problem was that they lied about what they gave. And they did so in a way to profile themselves dishonestly. In verse 7, now there elapsed an interval of about 3 hours, and his wife came in, not knowing what had happened, and Peter responded to her, "Tell me whether you sold the land for such and such a price." And she said, "Yes, that was the price." Then Peter said to her, "Why is it that you have agreed together to put the Spirit of the Lord to the test? Behold, the feet of those who have buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out as well." And immediately she fell at his feet and breathed her last. And the young men came in and found her dead, and they carried her out and buried her beside her husband. And great fear came over the whole church and over all who heard of these things. Sapphira, Ananias' wife, had agreed and plotted and planned. And to whom did they lie? Verse 4, they lied to God. And verse 9, they put the Holy Spirit to the test. So in these two illustrations, children, you've got a liar with leprosy and you've got two liars that are executed by God and die. And here is a picture of the ultimate danger of lying. In Revelation chapter 21 and verse 8, there is a list of those who are not admitted into the heavenly Jerusalem. For the cowardly and the unbelieving, the abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and liars. Their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. The dangers of dishonesty are very real in the Bible. Lying is demonic. It's part of our fallen sin nature. It brings about the judgment of God. But we should be encouraged, thirdly, by the blessings of honesty. Now, Solomon, you knew I was going to get to Proverbs. Solomon, as we turn to Proverbs chapter 2, gives to us many encouragements, blessings that are held out for this life. Now, there are blessings that are held out for the life to come, the age to come. But Solomon wants us to be encouraged, to be honest, for the blessings that will be ours in this life. Proverbs chapter 2 and verse 7. Speaking of the Lord, he stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity. The upright is a picture of a man who's walking straight. A man who is erect, and it's a picture of one who is straight in alignment with the commands of God. The one who has integrity is the honest man. He's not playing games. He's not deceiving. He's not being duplicitous. He's being true to God with an honest heart, and he is true to God when he's alone with God. He is honest before God when he's by himself, when no one else is watching. He's a man of integrity. What will he be rewarded with in this life? He'll be given wisdom. God will give him wisdom. Remember, in this series, we've looked at the value of wisdom. Children, you are naturally foolish. You need wisdom. But if you're playing games with God and lying to him and lying to others, God stands back. We'll abandon you to your foolishness. Be upright. Have integrity, and God will give wisdom and protection. In chapter 10 and verse 9 of Proverbs, he who walks in integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will be found out. There is security and safety in the life of honesty and integrity, but liars will be exposed. Liars live in the constant fear of being found out, of being exposed. And it is exhausting to have to try to maintain the lie. If you've ever lied and then lied in order to cover up the lie and then had to lie in order to cover up for the lie, after a while you start forgetting about what it is you were lying about. And it becomes mentally exhausting to try to keep up the facade and to remember when it was that you were lying, when it was that you were telling the truth, which is something we'll talk about later on, God willing, when we come to the damage that lying does. Because I believe, children especially, I believe that if a child begins to lie at an early age, he sets him or herself up for some real mental problems. Self-deception, I think, is at the root of so much that is recognized as mental illness in our day. And oftentimes it begins when someone is young and they convince themselves to do something that they know is wrong, and they lie to themselves about it, and then they spend years fortifying the lie. And years down the road, they've lost connection with reality because they've trained their brain to be deceiving, and they disconnect. And it starts in the first place, that first time where you knowingly put away the truth and begin to lie to yourself and convince yourself of something you know is not true. That is not a secure and safe way to live. You will be exposed. You will be found out. Chapter 11 and verse 3. The integrity of the upright will guide them, but the crookedness of the treacherous will destroy them. Verse 6. The righteousness of the upright will deliver them, but the treacherous will be caught by their own greed. Again, the contrast is a life of guidance or a life of destruction, a life of deliverance or a life of entrapment, the life of the truth teller, the life of the liar. Chapter 19, verse 1. Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than he who is perverse in speech and is a fool. Chapter 28 and verse 6. Better is the poor who walks in his integrity than he who was crooked, though he be rich. So there's the same proverb with two different parallel thoughts. Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than he who is perverse in speech and is a fool, than he who is crooked, though he is rich. Children, there are some ways to live that are better than others. And the way of a truth teller is a better way to live than the way of a liar. The way of lies brings destruction. But it's better to be a truth teller, even if you live in relative poverty, than to be a liar and to have an abundance of material things. In chapter 20 and verse 7, here's an encouragement for us as parents, as fathers. Solomon says, a righteous man who walks in his integrity, how blessed are his sons after him. Dads, let our sons see us living consistently with our stated principles. And we tell them this is what we believe, and we tell them this is what we value, and we tell them this is what we stand for. Let them see us being consistent with those principles. Ask your child tonight, Dad, if they think that you're an honest man. Ask them if they trust your word. When you make a promise to them, will they believe it? Will they trust you? Or will they think, maybe not? Ask them if they think that you're a man who is consistent with your convictions. Scary prospect? Or a delightful opportunity to have your sons affirm your integrity? You see, if you send them into their adulthood with the example of a father who has demonstrated integrity, then you send them with a blessing that is more valuable than houses and lands. Psalm 37:37, mark the blameless man and behold the upright. For the man of peace will have a posterity. He will have a posterity. He will have a lineage. Blessings for this life. But there's also the ultimate blessing of a life of honesty and integrity, and that concerns the blessing of having communion with God, both in this life and in the age to come. In Romans chapter 1, at verse 18, Paul presents his case against the idolatrous Gentile world. And he indicts the Gentile world basically because of their idolatry, which is founded upon a commitment to lie. Notice what he says in verse 25. They exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator who was blessed forever. Amen. And Paul makes it clear that we will live our lives either in commitment with the truth or in commitment with the lie. Either worshiping the true God or being deceived by Satan to worship idols of our own making. And the truth of God surrounds us. It's evident in the things that God has created, and it resonates with our own conscience as image bearers of God. These, who Paul indicts, suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Notice, that's what he says, verse 18. They suppress the truth. They believe the lie. The issue at the root of their idolatry is that they have deceived themselves knowingly to think that the worship of the creature is in fact the worship of the Creator. It's not. It's a lie. And they bought into that. Why? Because that idolatry is going to allow them to live by the hope that they can sin and get away with it. That's the lie. You shall not surely die. Men are either aligned with the truth or with lies. Jesus is the truth. In 2 Thessalonians, in chapter 2, Paul speaks to the issue not merely of the knowledge of the truth, but the love of the truth. He speaks about the work of the Antichrist. Antichrist tempts those who know the truth. So, children, that means that you're a particular target because you've gone to Sunday school, because you've been taught your catechisms, because you've been exposed to the truth. And that means that Satan wants to get you to be satisfied with just knowing about the truth, but not loving it. Verse 9, the one who's coming is in accordance with the activity of Satan, with all power and signs and false wonders, and with all the deception of wickedness for those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth so as to be saved. For this reason, God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they will believe what is false, in order that they may all be judged who did not believe the truth, but took pleasure in wickedness. You see, God's punishment is always in keeping with the nature of the sin. You want lies? Here's your punishment. More lies. You reject truth? Here's your punishment. I'll give you over to lies. You don't want the truth? Then I'll enable you to believe myth and stories and fairy tales. And if you don't love the truth, children, if you don't have a love for the Bible, if the only time you open up your Bible is when your mom and dad bring you to church or when your mom and dad sit you down for family worship, you need to ask yourself a question. Do I love the truth? Is this what my heart gravitates to? Do I want to know the truth and to love the truth? In Psalm 15, again, David, as a type and figure of Christ, describes those who come into His kingdom. I'm not saying that we gain admission by being truth tellers, but I'm saying if we're citizens of the kingdom, then truth telling is going to describe us. Psalm 15, O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell in your holy hill? He who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. He does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor take up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a reprobate is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord. He swears to his own hurt and does not change, nor does he put out his money at interest, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things will never be shaken. Here is the man who is a citizen of the kingdom of Christ, who is the way, the truth, and the life. He has a walk of integrity. He is one who lives righteously. He has truth in his heart, grace in his speech. He has moral discernment. He's a lover of those who fear the Lord. He's a churchman. He lives a self-denying life because truth is more important to him than his own convenience or his money. And if he makes a commitment, even if it costs him, he's going to be true to his word. Those who live in such a way will never be shaken. The Lord is righteous. He loves righteousness, and the upright will behold his face. Psalm 11:7. Who may ascend unto the hill of the Lord, and who may stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to falsehood, and has not sworn deceitfully. He shall receive a blessing from the Lord, and righteousness from the God of his salvation. This is the generation of those who seek him, who seek thy face, even Jacob. You want communion with the God who is the true and living God? Be honest. Be honest. I encourage you tonight to take Psalm 139 as your prayer this evening. Dads, after you talk to your kids tonight and ask them, do you trust me? Am I a man of my convictions? Do you see me as a man who is consistent with what I say I believe? I'm not perfect, but am I consistent? Do I have your conscience? If you have your conscience, Dad, it's because you're telling them the truth and you're living a life of truth. And then ask your sons and your daughters, can I trust you when you tell me that you're going someplace? Is that where you're going? When you tell me you're doing what you're doing, is that really what you're doing? When you tell me you're with this friend, is that who you're truly with? Are you a child of truth? Can your parents trust you? And then pray together from Psalm 139, verse 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there be any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the everlasting way. See if there's something in me that's going to lead me away from that straight and narrow path that leads unto life. And as you ask the Lord to have dealings with your heart, keep the eye of your faith upon Jesus Christ, the one who is described in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21. For you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. Christ is the truth, not you, not the entertainment industry, not the political industry. Christ. Christ is the truth. Trust in him. And when he says to you, I'll save you, I'll forgive you, I'll cleanse you, I'll take you to be with me, I'll teach you my ways, I'll be the example for your life and your speech, learn of me, I'll instruct you, I'll change you, I'll bring you to live with me forever. When he says that, you can believe him, because there's no deceit found in his mouth. He is worthy of your trust. He is the truth. He tells the truth. And if you're a Christian kid, you're going to want to be like Jesus. You're going to want to be honest. Amen.